Oh, hello there, outliers. Diyama Xiong here, and thank you so much for letting me be a part of your journey. We're here on the Outliers Edge podcast, where we champion the leaders who are shaping the next era to help them leverage what makes them different to make them make their biggest difference in the world. One day I will cut that down to just one or the other, but it is the full extent of it. We have one such leader here with us today, and I am really proud and excited to introduce you outliers to Louis Q. And Louis, I'm excited to have this conversation with you. Thank you very much for making the time here. We'll take it from there. Thanks much.
Hey, awesome man. So good to be here and thanks for inviting me along. The concept of outlier is quite interesting because I've always felt like a bit of an outlier myself growing
Yeah.
up. And yeah, I really like that concept because so much of the modern narrative is about fitting in, isn't it? It's about like, hey, you gotta conform to a certain way or you gotta do things a certain way. But I've always thought that if we want to live a life that's different to other people, or if we want to achieve things that's different to other people, we need to do something that's different to other people. And I guess in a way that's being an outlier, isn't it? So yeah, thanks for having me here. Really excited to have this chat, and I don't know where it's going to go, but yeah, it should be fun.
You and me both, Louis. I think that's fun is definitely on the table here. Let's do this. I want to give people a chance to get to know you, and see a bit about like how you've lived your outlier out in the world. So in a bit, I'll ask you to share a bit about yourself, both personally and professionally. If it's cool with you, what I'd like to do is just actually just ground myself and let you know who you've been to me so far. You good with that? I don't know what I'm going to say. I know that I want to do this, but I don't know what I'm going to say yet. You good with that?
Good man.
All
You
right,
go
cool.
for it.
Yeah. So, Louis, I'm taking you in right now, and I think one of the things about you that I've really come to appreciate here is that like you have what I would consider a style or an essence to you, and that's something that like really comes out, right? And it's an essence of like clearly doing the work, being like present with the work, but also being in a place where there's I don't know if the right word is effortlessness, but there's an ease, maybe that's what it is. There's a smoothness from that perspective that like that comes through. And so like I get excited to talk to you because like when I talk to you, I get reminded that like, hey, we can do great things, and we can bring with it like a level of both ambition and ease like simultaneously, and then keep growing from there. So like we're still getting to know each other, but I wanted to share a bit of like who you've been to me so far.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
I appreciate you. I appreciate you. Well, why don't we let people here know a little bit more about you concretely? Share a bit about who you've been, who you are professionally and personally. We'll take it from there.
Yeah, well, I was born in China, and came to Australia when I was 5 years old. So since then, trying to navigate the place of upbringing into a brand new place. I didn't speak English, so I came to Australia. There weren't too many Asian people in Australia at that time. So learning the language, trying to fit in, learning how to tell the teacher you need to use the bathroom. That was all a bit of a journey.
Yeah.
And then after two years and a bit in Australia, my parents decided to bring me back to China again because as immigrants, they felt like they couldn't look after me whilst like working two, three jobs. So they didn't tell me that though. They said we're going on a holiday. So we went for a holiday back to China, and they sort of just left me there with my grandparents without telling me, and then they came back without me. So I spent the next 2 years in China again, which was weird because I learned how to speak English and I forgot half my Chinese and then couldn't adapt to the culture. We weren't watching the same cartoons as the kids back home. And yeah, I did that for 2 years, and 2 years later I came back to Australia, had to deal with the same thing again. So it was quite confusing growing up. But the good thing was it taught me how to be adaptable. It taught me that it was normal to be an outlier because look, I didn't have a choice. You know, I came here being the immigrant kid, went back being the kid that was overseas but is back again, and came back to Australia as like a semi-immigrant kid again. So it was I've been an outlier for most of my life growing up. And that experience really normalized everything, and it helped me become adaptable. It helped me get used to new environments quickly, and not necessarily need to fit in order to feel significance. So that was, yeah. So I've been in Australia ever since then. Thankfully, I've been in the same environment. I'm pretty much consider myself, quite Australian, quite Western-minded nowadays. And throughout high school, my parents still went through some financial struggles, so watching them navigate that was quite enlightening for me. And when I was 18, I saw them sort of go from a real low point to picking themselves back up through business. So I decided, hey, if they could do it, I feel like I'm a bit more talented than they are. I feel like I'm a bit more capable. So if they could do it, I think I could do it. So while studying, I studied nutrition for, not sure why, but I studied nutrition when I was in university. And whilst doing that, started my first business, fell in love with the process of business and the personal development that came with business. Yeah, through that I did well. Started getting invited to speak in different places and to coach people. And randomly one day, my high school tutor messaged me. He was a really smart guy. I looked up to him. He was a guy that taught me English in high school. And he said, "Hey, I'm starting a business, and it seems it like you're doing well. Do you want to invest?" And I go, "Well, yes, and what is it?" And then he shared with me the plan, and I was like, "Yeah, whatever, just take my money," because I was young and naive and just felt like everything worked and everything could work and everything can make me $1 billion or whatever. So gave them my money, and that's when I started investing. And through that, got involved in a little bit of that startup world. And I guess the coaching and the startup sort of came together as well, helping a lot of early stage startups navigate some of their challenges. And I guess I just fell in love with business even more outside of my original industry. We got involved in capital raising, property development. Now I just started my own podcast because I just want some of these stories to be told, because the whole concept of creating something out of nothing is fascinating to me, and everyone's got their unique story on how they journey that, but I want those stories to be told. And today I don't really know what I do anymore. I just do a whole bunch of everything that I enjoy and passionate about.
Well, this is quite amazing, Louis. Like a couple different things like fly out at me. One that just that like last bit there around like the helping people who to create something out of nothing. I love hearing that, I think I'll identify and I'll say, hey, I work with Outliers because they're one of the first, one of the only, or one of a kind in what they do, and I'm hearing that like that had been your journey from what age five onwards, you're playing your own game there. Coincidentally, I ended up living in Ghana. My parents are from Ghana, so I was first generation in America. But I had like eight months when I was like 4 years old out there. So I like, and I came back and I can understand the language, but I couldn't actually speak it, and so on and so forth. So I like, as you're saying, there was a lot of like personal lessons you're taking me back in. And I also really just love like the nutrition part. Like one thing in my mind here, like the business that you started, was it related to nutrition at all?
It was
Okay.
my parents' business
Okay.
was so that's why I originally started it. And I went in, and that's the funny thing, you go in thinking you'd expect something, and it was the complete opposite of what I expected.
Right, let's dive in. What did you expect it to be, and what did it actually end up being in your own words?
Well, okay, so I mean, we can be a bit scientific here if you want to, because
Yeah.
one part of my brain is like a science brain.
Let's go with
But
it.
so my parents' business was with nutritional supplements. So I grew up taking supplements, and I went, cool, I mean, great, right? So I went to study nutrition to really understand the context of what the role that nutrition plays in people's health, right? And I thought supplement was like a role in that. I went in And the truth that I discovered, well, their point of view of the truth was we don't need supplements. And okay, well, that just shook my worldview of how everything worked, right? So I started exploring that, and I started asking my lecturers, okay, so fair enough, you're a smart person. Why? What's the science? What's the justification behind all of that? And they said, well, if everyone ate a healthy diet, then you wouldn't need nutritional supplements because you can get everything from food. Like, okay, I like that statement. Therefore, as healthcare professionals, we should be recommending people to eat a good diet, which makes total sense. So then my next question for them was, okay, how do you define enough? So if everyone ate from their a really good diet, we encourage that lifestyle, and you say that would be enough. What's the definition of enough? Because surely that's quantifiable. They said, well, it's what people consider the RDI, which is the recommended daily intake, and that's like RDA in the US, I think. So if you hit that mark, then you're getting all your main nutrition. I go, okay,
All right,
fair
following.
enough, fair enough. Now let's define that number then. Where do we get that number? How do we even come up with that number, right? So the RDI originally came from World War II, where Britain was under not quarantine, I was going to say, embargo, if you will, because the Germans were trying to invade. And so they had this whole supply issue with food, right? So they started rationing food, and they needed to come up with numbers of what is the minimum number of a certain vitamin needed for that person not to be deficient in that vitamin. So an example I like to use is vitamin C. Most of us know that if you don't get enough vitamin C in your diet, you get scurvy, which is what the sailors got back in the 1600s. So that's the definition. If you get enough vitamin C in your diet, the enough is the measurement that most of the population would not get scurvy. That's what's enough.
Okay.
So in my head, we don't eat vitamin C to prevent scurvy, right? We eat it as an antioxidant. It helps us absorb iron. It helps us produce collagen, which is great for our bones and tissue. But we can't measure that. We can only measure the point at which you get scurvy, and that becomes the RDI. So then my argument back to them was, okay, I get that this is the minimum needed not to be sick, but what is the optimal we need? And then that's where the science gets really difficult because we can't measure optimal. There's no special measurement for that. It's really hard to quantify. And that's when I got to a point of agreeing to disagreeing, because I guess you can't teach something that can't be completely quantified. So for me, it becomes more of a personal decision of, yes, you can meet the minimum benchmark, or you could give yourself some extra boost in order to I guess function more optimally. And there is a point where you're not thirsty versus you're hydrated, right? But you have to find that point yourself. And yeah, so that was interesting. I ended up in uni studying about mostly hospital nutrition, clinical nutrition, and I felt that so much.
Louis, do you mind real quick before we go on
Yeah.
to this here? There's some things in what you said that like really kept. Do you mind if I pull out some things?
Of course, yeah.
All right, cool. So I like hearing about the journey and what'll happen over time. So I'll pull things back out for the outliers to come through. You said something that I think just now that really struck me. So I heard you challenging the status quo in terms of like at least like the underlying assumptions. Like I get this is what it is. We can all agree that the RDI is this. Do we understand why it was set up? And like given the function of what it was there to do is has been set. But given that we now are in a place where the functionality has grown beyond the original intent of this year, what do we do now? Right. So that one part, like, I think really hits me and really strikes me where it's like, how many things in our world right now are set up to be enough, quote unquote, let's use this term, like enough to make sure you don't, you're alive or you're not sick. But there's so much more available, right? And just and how much of it like do we just take for granted because it's like, well, it's the RDI. You do it to the RDI, or whatever the equivalent of that is. So outliers, I'll be thinking about that for you in your space here. Like what's where are some places where like all right, let me make this real as I'm asking out there. I think for me, this shows up in terms of when I like this the word too much, right? Because it's easy for me to do volume. It's easy for me to come in with intensity towards things like, and it's not, I'm not even being intense. I'm just being, you know, but like that's just the way that I operate. And so what's coming for me is this component of, yeah, for most people, perhaps just doing quote unquote enough is enough for them. But, I've taken on this motto that if it's not too much, it's not enough for me now. 'Cause I'm like, at the very least, I want to see like, to your point, what could go beyond that? What if you didn't want to just be crossing the bare minimum, but you wanted to actually really optimize yourself? I have one more comment I want to make, but before I get to that, I just want to just like see what resonates with you in any of that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think I probably take that what you described just then into more of what I do today outside of a nutritional context, right?
We're gonna let's get closer to what you're doing now. But I thought there was another thing that you put in here where it's like we can't measure optimal. And I just felt like when you said that, I think like for any of us outliers out there that are looking like for like proof of what we're trying to get done or like proof that this way is it's like let's make sure that we hit the RDI, right? We hit the benchmark in here. I almost consider like, what are the best principles that need to get done? You got to market, you got to let people know about things, you have to actually do good work, so on and so forth. Let's make sure that that's done. But then what comes beyond that? Like, I feel like that's actually a place where we as outliers really get a chance to play. And when you talk about like how people create something out of nothing, I feel like that's where a lot of the game gets to play. So there was those two parts really like struck, like hit me pretty hard in here as I was like, as I was listening. So let's fast forward then today, right? Take me to today. Like you had the business, it did well, you started investing, and then like you just kept growing your career from there, essentially, right? It's weird to say career and entrepreneurship together, but like, yeah, you just kept growing from there. Take me to today. What's going on in your world today?
The newest thing is the podcast, Secret Hustle Journal. The goal is to
Can you say the
interview
name again one more
people.
time?
Secret Hustle Journal. Secret Hustle Journal. The idea was, I know a lot of people in different fields of entrepreneurship, and I know their journeys, and I realize that most people don't know their journeys, and I'm inspired by their journeys, and I thought, gee, these stories should be told. So I decided to start a podcast to interview these people. And I guess the overall theme of the podcast is if people kept a journal during their hustle years, what would be on that journal? So really keeping it real, keeping it raw and authentic so people can, I guess, normalize failure. Because a lot of these guys failed, normalized struggles, because a lot of them struggled a lot. And I'm hoping that someone would hear it and go, oh, I'm going through that. I'm going through that. Oh, I'm not alone. You know, they're not crazy talented people. They are just like me. So if they can do it, I can do it. That's my hope.
I love hearing that, and a part of me wants it like if you haven't. So allies, go check out the podcast, Secret Hustle Journal. If you had to share with us right now one of the entries, like that might be on your journal. What's one of them? Because right now, what I've heard from the story is like, you know, like wasn't really trying, had a little bit of a background, did business, ended up doing pretty well, invested, wasn't really sure what I was doing there, but like I did it anyway, and like now look at me here, right? And so I'd be kind of curious about the Secret Hustle Journal underneath that. Anything you want to share on that? What don't we know?
Oh man, there's I'm trying to think what to say. There's a concept that I've always had. You know, there are certain things that you do almost naturally,
Yes.
and you don't realize you do it because it's almost second nature, and then over time you realize, oh, this is different. Like no one else does this, only I do this. And then
Yes.
I try to distill it into a model, then I try to use that model to replicate and to teach other people. So there's that. But I think just to answer this question first, one of the things on My Secret Hustle Journal, which was shared so well, so succinctly by a guy called Daniel Priestley recently. I heard him. He said, most people like to be entrepreneurs because it's cool. And that was me at 18. I thought, oh, I'm an entrepreneur. Yeah. You know, it's cool. And we like to say we're an entrepreneur. Chuck that on our Instagram bio or whatever. But he said, in reality, most entrepreneurs, for at least the first several years until their business takes off, if it does take off, you're really just a salesperson. That's really who you are. And it doesn't mean that's your primary role, but it is definitely a role, because if you're working for yourself, you're the CEO, you're the marketing guy, you're the technology guy, you're the PR guy, and you're the sales guy. And if you can't sell your vision, since it's your vision, if you can't sell it, then nobody else is going to be able to duplicate that, right? So that's one thing I learned real early at 18, which is get your ego in check. Like, a salesperson is not like a 1970s used car salesman sort of, identity, right? It's a very different thing now. And your ability to sell, your ability to go out there and talk to people about your product and promote it and make it sound good and amazing, and packaging it in a way that other people would appreciate it, that is something that's so important for entrepreneurship. But I see a lot of people nowadays, they want to be the entrepreneur, they want to be the founder, they want to come up with a nice branding and all that sort of stuff, but they can't sell, and they're not willing to sell. They want to delegate the selling to other people because they don't like the process of being a salesperson. And for me, doing that role, the sales role, was one of the most humbling things. And humility is a strength that I think is so undervalued in modern day entrepreneurship, and that's how I learned my humility.
So you have me on a couple things now. There's a couple different hooks here that I'm feeling here. One, let's just talk a little bit about the selling component right now. And you know me, I'm going to do my best to try and keep things real. And so the realness for me is I'm going to ask myself here, okay, where am I at in selling, right? Because I think a lot of outliers come in here and they have something awesome about them. Like for me, like I want to get back to this part that we talk about, like the modeling component. I really think it's important because that's ultimately what I believe is at the core of what happens here at Outliers Edge. We help them create a model of success based on them. Like, what is that thing that you've been doing? And like how do we help you take it from something unconscious that was getting your results, and then help make it conscious, and then create a process, systems, models, whatever it is like do it on purpose all the time, and then help other people either do the same thing because it works, or use that to help create whatever process other people who aren't you can be successful with. So I really want to get into that with you here because it's what I love. Before, like, are you going to go there in just a bit?
We could do that for part two if you want.
Yes, let's do
I think
that for part two. That would
that would work.
be
Yeah.
so well. All right, y'all. So look out for part two coming out here in just a bit. Where Lou and I will go into that. So let's talk a little bit more. Then we'll wrap this conversation up around the selling of the vision and selling, because I think I like you know you get it. Like you run into people who have an amazing idea who are like, I want to be an entrepreneur. I want to be a coach. I want to help like people out in the world. And then when it comes to the selling part, we just hit a wall. So I'm curious about like anything that you've seen from working with the various entrepreneurs that you do, from investing in different organizations that you do, from your own personal experience of like stepping into selling there. Like anything else that you would like put in there is like common challenges and ways that you have found to overcome it, or things that you've helped people overcome it.
This is quite nuanced, and I
Yes.
don't want it to be like blanket advice, because
Thank
everyone's
you.
going to go through different things. So whoever's actually listening to this, like, definitely huge grains of salt on this. Apply it to your own situation if it's applicable. For me, I like to invest in people rather than ideas, because most ideas that I've invested in probably pivoted two, three times anyway. It changes, and that's totally fine. So I like to invest in people. That's who I trust more than an idea. And one thing that I value in people is humility. And I don't mean that as like a wishy-washy sort of character trait, but I'm understanding that your ability to admit that you're wrong is so valuable in your journey of success. Because if you think you're right, but you're wrong, you're going to lose your business, right? So for me, humility is hugely practical. It's having that soft heart and having the right people around you, not everybody, but just the right people around you who can give you advice, who can give you genuine thoughts without, worrying about hurting your opinions, hurting your feelings, sorry. You need people like that around you. And then you need to have a soft heart to receive what they're saying and going, hey, maybe there's a point to that. Maybe, no, that's not the point. But I don't agree with that. But I agree with that. I agree with that. And I'm going to change. So that process, I think, requires humility. So then when someone is pitching me an idea, one of the things I look out for is like, are they humble? Can they take feedback? And then are they just pretending? Because I see a lot of them go, yeah, and they disagree with you, but you know that they're not re they're just pretending to look humble, but that true humility, like what did you go through to really hone that humility? And for me, it was through sales, right? Going back to that original topic, it was selling vitamins, and then people giving you weird looks and people making nasty remarks and all that sort of stuff. And if you've been through that, man, like you're bulletproof. You know what I'm saying? Like it's all good. Like if you can go through willingly go into that zone of people criticizing, going through rejections, going through like that skill, man, you can take with you for your whole life. And I recently interviewed a guy who owns a gym, and he had the same analogy for the gym. He says he puts his body through difficult things so that he can come out of the gym and do difficult things. So it's the same thing. It's just going through that difficulty, coming out stronger, not coming out victimized, but coming out stronger, using that experience to empower yourself to go further in whatever else that you do.
So there's a couple different things here that we'll wrap up for today, but I'm getting like the real through line here. It's not about sales. It's about like where do you go to craft your humility, and because that ends up being like you said something that like I love, like I was like, oh, I've never heard of this, but humility as a strength. I've heard it as a value, as a virtue, but not as a strength. And what I'm getting here is like it wasn't about the selling part. It was about how do you get to a place where you can be humble enough to like allow for the change to take place, allow for like pivots to come through, like your ego isn't on the chopping block. You may not agree with everything that comes your way, but you're willing to receive, to go out and get it and receive and make adjustments along that path. So I get that. And I think like since you went there, I like to play. I like to play with you here. Right now, I feel like I'm coming out of my own like humble part. It's actually really interesting. But I went to say humility, but I almost said humiliation, and that's probably because of how I feel about that. So I'll take that as a note for myself. But 2023, it was like, oh, I had built the business, and then end of 2020, the beginning of 2023, end of 2022, I started to realize, I'm like, did I build a business, or have I built like a place where I can get revenue in sometimes, but not often enough to really make this thing work, and so on and so forth. You know what I'm saying? Like I can keep it going because like I have means to keep it going, but it's not there. And then taking 2023 to take a whole step back and be like, what is this thing? And like how does it work? I am an economic I graduated with an economics degree, and I'm like, does the math, like is this actually working? So I had to take a huge step back, longer than I expected, in there. But what has been interesting is now we're experiencing what's coming up afterwards. And the interesting thing is, I'm like, generally speaking, and this we'll get into like the model and things later on, but I'm like, a lot of what I was doing was fine. It wasn't actually off. I just wasn't working it hard enough. I didn't create systems behind it. It wasn't robust enough for what the world actually needed. Like, to that part of like, to go out and get the feedback and then actually change things and actually implement it and not say like and not be stuck and or dreaming. That was my thing. You know, oh, here goes all the different ways it could work, but I'm never gonna actually put it out in front of people. So I appreciate this. If you're cool with it, I like every once in a while I'm just gonna like come and join you. Like, 'cause you brought in something real that I haven't that someone else hasn't brought in here around like actually cutting their teeth on humility. And yeah, I'm like, if you're jumping in that water, I'm gonna dive in with you. So thanks for that.
And you know, one thing that I thought of is every other business that we ha have heard of, like Facebook, like big tech companies, when they come up with the products, apps, it's always, you know, they got the versions, the V.001, 002. They start with beta MVP, and then they slowly build different versions, and they keep updating. And in a way, it's the same thing with whatever business we're building. If we build the first iteration and hoping that that would work, like, it doesn't make sense because nobody else ever builds business that way. You build the first iteration, that becomes your MVP, and then you improve, you improve, you improve, you improve, you improve. And part of that improvement is saying that the previous version sucked in a certain point of view, right? It was good. We'll leave the good parts and the parts, but which parts were not good? And then we improve, we improve, we improve. Everyone else builds business that way, but it's not personal. But when solo entrepreneurs, if you're building something from scratch, that's where things get personal. And when they get personal, by you destroying the previous version, it's almost like you're destroying your own work. And that's why a lot of people don't do it. So they want to just get that one hit wonder. I'm going to build it, build it, build it. And then it's going to be perfect. Everybody's going to love it. And I'm going to be rich. That's not how it works, though. Right.
No, I think there's another component, at least from that experience, is like the external, like the people around you, right? That's why I found like the benefit of being surrounded by other entrepreneurs or other people who are creating something out of nothing, you know? Because it's like otherwise people are like, aha, I knew what you were doing didn't make sense, and you're proving it because if it did make sense, you wouldn't be changing, you know? And it's like, the whole point is to figure out what makes sense. I can tell you right off, like from almost what you're saying right here, like just so you know, you're probably what you start out with probably is not it. So like the real goal is figure out how quickly you can get humble enough to take the steps to figure out what actually could work. I might like don't let me put words in your mouth, but that's one of the takeaways that I'm deciding to take from what you're saying right now.
100%, man. 100%.
Oh. All right. Well, I'm excited. I'm excited for the next part of our conversation. I'm appreciative of you, Louis. You've gotten me thinking. You got me in playing here. Let's do this here. Let's end this conversation here for now. For any outlier out there who's like, you know, like I'm in. Like they're already going to listen to Secret Hustle Journal, the podcast. So they can go find you there. If they want to stay in your world, how else can they like stay connected with you and go further with you?
I try to post more on LinkedIn nowadays. It's a bit inconsistent, but you can find me on LinkedIn, Louis Q, or Instagram is, a bit of professional, bit of personal. So yeah, Louis at Louis.QU on Instagram. That's probably where you'd find me.
Right. All right. Well, thank you. And then we'll end off with one last question for you, which is, Louis, if you had to leave a message for yourself, knowing what you know right now, if you had to leave a message for yourself that you wouldn't listen to for, let's say, another 10 years, but it'd be like the message you want to make sure you don't forget 10 years later. What is the message that you would leave for yourself right now?
So a message for 10 years later.
Yeah, it's like a time capsule. It's like you're like, hey, like I've like this is important. Like life is going to go in so many different ways. You're going to have all these opportunities, ups, downs, so on and so forth. But hey, 10 years from now, I don't want to forget this. What would that be?
Got it. It'll be a message because I'll need to give myself context. But I'm thinking that between now and the next 10 years, everything's going to change, as it always does. One thing that I value the most is maintaining a soft heart. And I need to write that down somehow so that in 10 years' time, I open that time capsule up and go, oh, no, I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Or it'll be like a, ooh, yeah, I think I may have let my environment change me a little bit, and I want to go back to that place where I have a soft heart.
I appreciate you. Thank you for bringing your heart to this conversation. Looking forward to our next one here. Thank you so much, there. All right. Until the next time we
Thanks for
talk.
having me.
Journey on.